Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition. We have a very special show for you today. We have a very special guest. He's a repeat guest. He's none other than Mr. George Ross. On today's show, George is recounting a portion of the story of 40 Wall Street. 40 Wall Street is an iconic building in Lower Manhattan. It was at one point vying for the tallest building in the world honors, still in the top 10 tallest buildings in New York City. The building is located diagonally across from the New York Stock Exchange. The building was acquired in derelict, virtually abandoned condition. This is a project that George was personally responsible for when he was executive vice president in the Trump Organization. While this building was definitely one of a kind, there's some powerful negotiation lessons to be learned from the recounting of this story. Listen to my conversation with George Ross. Oh, good evening, George. Nice to see you.
Hi, good. Okay.
Let's start off with a question that, frankly, has been on my mind for years. And I know it sounds kind of strange to say that, but you have told the story of 40 Wall Street several times, and I've heard that story clearly, and I know that Donald bought the building for $1 million, and the first financing on that building, if I remember the story correctly, was only $28 million, which was not nearly enough. And so the question is, how did you go into a project of that scale, knowing that you were borrowing not enough money, knowing that more money would be needed and that lender would either need to subordinate or be replaced? How do you go into that with confidence, knowing that you're not borrowing enough money?
No, you didn't. That's a good question. And the financing on that building was very unique or important. At the time that the building was working on refurbishing the building, the trades, the unions, and the workers had no work. And it was primarily a bank which wanted to get the building going so that its workers could, its employees and all people would have something to do. So there was a cooperation in the bank to give the city a push to build a building. And they knew, and we knew at the time that the amount of money that you were getting from the first advance was not enough to do the building. All right. However, there were a lot of liens on the property because the prior party hadn't done anything in the way of financing, and it really was in bad shape. But the bank represented primarily the building trades unions and wanted to give a impetus to the building trade. So they went out of their way to make enough of a loan to clear the liens. And then if you could clear the liens, they would give you money to start building. So it was really a cooperative effort by a bank that wanted to have the job and want to have it because the liens were not being paid. They had loans which were outstanding that were not paid because nobody was touching the building. So it was a cooperative venture. It was funded initially as if you could get the cooperation of the trades to say, hey, hold off, we won't foreclose, you won't have to pay us off, just give us work to build a building or make a trade. So that's really a cooperative effort to have a project that would require funds, and the investors at the bank would have something to loan that would be an upbeat project in the city. So say here you had a building which had, I'm trying to think of the amount of liens. So you had the trades performed work and wanted to get paid, but nobody would pay them. So the banks, which had funded the unions and continued to fund the unions, had no place to get paid if the building never got built. So there was a cooperative effort to say, But you go to Trump, you go ahead and get rid of the liens and show us what you're going to do, and then we'll decide to give you additional money if it look if the project looks feasible. That's what happened. It's hard for me to explain it because it's what was one of a kind. But you're now this bank, the Union Bank, had a mortgage which would never be paid if the building never got built, never got renovated. And you had a whole bunch of companies or construction groups that wouldn't get paid even though they had liens. They couldn't foreclose the lien. There's nothing to foreclose. So they said to Trump, basically, if you will help us get rid of the liens by working with the projects people, and we'll give you protection against the liens being foreclosed, but you've got to go ahead and build. You've got to go put in more money to take the project from where it was being derelict into a feasible project. So the liens never got paid 100 cents on the dollar or anything, really. If you agreed to build to renovate the building, they would forego the liens in exchange for the work. So that was the basis of starting out, that you didn't have to worry about paying. It was like, oh, well over $800,000 worth of liens to the various contractors, and said, look, we're not paying it. If you want to foreclose, foreclose. You've got nothing to foreclose. You can't get, there's no equity in the property. So if you foreclose, you'll get nothing. Rather than get nothing, we will agree to fund the reconstruction and the improvements in the building if you will forego the liens. But we will give you a priority that you can work, and we'll give you the contracts going forward, but you have to give up the rights that you have under the existing liens. Mechanics liens were in default. So the that's one of a kind.
Right, but even if you put that aside, you still have a situation where you have a project that you can start, but the path to the finish line isn't clear. And I'm thinking about, you probably heard the term getting half pregnant. You don't want to get half pregnant. You want to make sure that you're going to get to the finish line.
As part of the project of getting the loan from the bank agreed that they would fund the loan if Trump agreed to go build the building. So you needed somebody to go ahead and fund the building, and the construction loan stood by the wayside in the interim because there was nobody who wanted to put up the money there. There was nothing there. So it was said if in fact you will. But we will get the contractors that had the mechanics liens there to forego the liens if you give them work to do what's necessary to make the building a feasible building.
Well, presumably, if there were mechanics liens, then most likely the building was in default on the ground lease as well.
It was. There's no question of it. But as far as the owner of the property is concerned, there was nobody doing anything. It was vacant building, so there's no income coming in. So you had a situation where for the entities that had loaned money or were owed money to work cooperatively in order to get a building built, which would eventually give them would compensate them for their loans. So they'd have to say, all right, if you owe us, say, we had a lien of $300,000. If you will give us work, say $500,000 worth of new work, we'll forget the $300,000 lien. So it was a total cooperative arrangement of financing between labor and ownership. And the bank was willing to do it. The bank was willing to do it because this bank had made a lot of loans in the construction industry. So the way that they would get their loans repaid from the construction industry is there has to be something built. So they said, if you go ahead and build it, we'll forget the loans. So as part of it, as part of the whole thing, there was we had to make arrangements with the companies that had mechanics liens on the property and say, if you want to foreclose your mechanics lien, go ahead, you'll get nothing. If on the other hand, you want a construction job where you can recapture the money that's owed to you, or at least going forward, you'll have work to do, then go along with this arrangement. And the trades, they really had no alternative if they want to get money. So it was a cooperative venture between Trump as a potential developer and the banks, one bank basically, that had underwritten the loans and said, oh, okay, the only way they're going to get their money back is if somebody turns that into a feasible building, which Donald agreed to do. So the first part of the transaction was the bank agreed that they would fund $30 million as a bank mortgage loan. And the $30 million was to clear up any liens, which effectively either the party who put the mechanic lien would forego the lien or they wouldn't get paid. So he said, if you want to get paid, the only way you're going to get paid is let us do work on the building, and then we will get a mortgage, which will get you the money so that you get paid going forward.
Now, if I remember correctly, you had designed the project almost like three buildings because the floor plate, as you step up the building, gets smaller and smaller. It was almost three distinct projects, if I remember correctly. How did you approach the phasing? Because at the end of the day, you still only have one piece of collateral, which is the building. Were all three phases funded by the same lender so that they didn't have to subordinate?
Yes. No, they subordinated, but they were funded. But you had to show the lender that the project would be feasible to do it. So that if you turned it into a first-class building, then effectively that the project could go forward. And you now have new electricity, new elevators, and so forth. So there had to be a guarantee that, yeah, it's going to be a feasible operating building if, in fact, you take the $30 million loan from the bank and you put it into a reconstruction of the building. It will be feasible as a building, assuming you can rent it. In other words, you can take something that's obsolete and make it doable. And what happened effectively was the market changed. And this is not unusual, as you know. In a down cycles, somebody can come in and operate and get great funding because the banks or whoever has the money invested there has no alternative to go unless you want to basically put in money to make it an operating building. So the key was to solve the mechanics liens by not paying them, just saying, hey, we'll give you work going forward and pay you that way, but we're not going to pay you for the past due. It's already been done. That was number one. Number two was going out and creating into the marketplace a viable product that could be rented because the rent was going to be cheap, you know, because there will be a need for space in downtown Manhattan. And I'm getting cooperation, I can force cooperation with all of the companies, anybody that's got a lien or a loan against it. So they really had very little choice because if they foreclose, they get nothing. If they foreclose, they can foreclose. There's no equity. So they can't, what do you want? You want to foreclose and get, you got a $16 million loan against the building that's vacant? No, they said, in lieu of that, at this point, I'll show you how to repay the loan. We'll give you work that will help you recuperate, to get back to $16 million or whatever it was. So we'll turn it from a non-operating building into an operating building with the cooperation of the lender. Yeah, also understand at that point, there was tremendous push by the city of New York to make this work, because here you have a 1 million square foot building, it's now vacant with not with very little electricity, and practically the liens that were there, the mechanics liens, you're never going to see them get paid.
Yeah, and you don't want to demolish a building that's diagonally across from the stock exchange.
No, that's correct. It had the right location, and in addition, the deals which you could get from the trades were fantastic, because they wanted to recuperate some lost money. So say the only way you can get what I already owe you is to agree to let us construct and bring this building up to snuff, and then we will pay you for the new work that you're doing, but we will not pay you for what you've already put into the building before. But that's a one of a kind. In other words, this was not something that anybody had really had the courage to undertake, except Trump, because there was no market for leasing office space. None.
Not that different than today in some ways.
Yes, that's true. So the feasibility of the project going forward, to a great extent, depended upon their believing that Trump would build the building to bring it up to a standard that it would be rentable without physically adding a lot of his money. But you had to convince the bank, the labor bank that was there, that the only way they're going to see any money on the building is for them to loan more money and take the building from its present condition to an operating building, assuming that there's going to be some tenants that are going to take the building. And then turned out, yes, there were. But the concept that worked, was acceptable to the bank and also to Trump, was, here, fellas, you want the space. I'm going to give you $15 million. Go build the space any way you want, but give me a 20-year lease. They could now build the office space to their needs or desires, not what would you want in the marketplace as such, because, hey, some of the ceilings were 6 feet high when you should have 8 or 10 feet. So it was whatever the tenant needed in order to operate it as a feasible tenant location, as against the landlord putting it on the open market and going to look for a tenant. That's basically what happened. And of course, with first coming on, with American Express was there, and they said, go here, go build your building. I don't care if your ceilings are 6 feet high. I don't care if you want to put partitions everywhere, but you pay the rent. So they really funded the construction of space, which the tenant was happy to get, because you could now, where could you get space and build it to your own specifications without having to go back to a landlord and say, I want this, I want that, I want this. Landlord throws in a pot and says, here's $30 million, do what you want with it. And that was the, so the, there was a change in concept. So part of the negotiation which went on, there were liens or work that had never been paid for. For example, there was air conditioning units, and they were being foreclosed. There's $3 million for the units that were in the basement. They were big, huge units. And Trump said, basically, I'm not paying them. You want to take the units, take them out. Because you didn't need the $3 million units. You could end up with something that'd be $600,000 or $800,000. So you now got the units that were worth $6 million. You got them for nothing, and they had to hook them up. So you had brand new air conditioning units to service the entire building, which the company that put in the units had no choice, because they couldn't take the units out without tearing down a wall, and that would have been extremely expensive. So I said, well, if I tear down the wall and take the units out, the units have no recapture value. So leave them in place and forget it. So somebody made you a gift of about $6 million worth of air conditioning units. And this concept followed through in the entire project. The one that you can say to trades would say, trade says, well, hey, I did the work. I'm entitled to 300,000. Says, I'm not paying you 300,000. So if you want to stay, get any part of your 300,000, we got to make a deal. So the deal was, I'm not going to pay you the 300,000, but I'll show you how to make good part of it back by continuing to build the building and doing trade work. But
Fascinating.
that's one of a kind.
Yeah.